So Mirtz Hashem, we can start a new sugya today, which I've been kind of excited about, and that's on Daf Zayin Amud Aleph, and that's the sugya of Shnayim Adukim B'Talis. So let's take a look on Daf Zayin Amud Aleph, and we're about, I would say, how many lines down from the top would you call it? About 10 lines down from the top? No, more than that, I think. Do you see a Tosus Dibra Maskel Yochel and Natko? Sure. Oh, so if you drop down a little bit below that Tosus, it should say Tani Rav Tachlifa.
Yeah, Tani Rav Tachlifa Bar Rabbi Kameter Rabbi Bohu.
So Tani Rav Tachlifa Bar Rav. Now it's interesting, they don't tell you his father's name, but they tell you he was a Ben Eretz Yisrael, so that identifies him.
That's the most important part, right?
Yeah,
there.
That's the most important part. So he had a Braisa Lifnei Kamei De Rabbi Avo, in front of Rabbi Avo. If I'm not mistaken, Rabbi Avo was in Caesarea. Anyway. So what does it say in the Braisa? Shnayim Adukim B'Talos. As opposed to Ochazin, which might imply that they're holding the ends of the talus, Adukim implies that they're really grabbing on to the goof of the talus itself, the body of the talus. And the Braisa says, Zenotel Achiyono Magas, Vizenotel Achiyono Magas. So even though you will not split the talus down the middle, like the Mishnah says at the beginning of that Perek of Yachloku, and one of them will get X amount, X percentage of the talus, the other will get Y percentage. But nevertheless, it's considered a kind of yachloku. And if you remember that we spoke about yachloku as a muchzokus, and if both people are muchzok in the talus, then each one has a right to say, you know, Masha Takas Yadonim Shali, you know, there's an Anan Sadi here on that part. And therefore, if a person is called Adukim Metalis, he's one of the two Adukim Metalis, then it makes sense that through his Chazok on the Talis, he'll get everything that's included in that Chazok. But what about Vashar? What about the balance of the Talis, which is somehow left unaduked? There's no Adikus in the middle part that falls between Reuven and Shimon, is Cholkin B'Shava. It means that now we can apply the rule of our Mishnah, of Yachloku, that each one gets exactly half. So first we discount all the Adukim, part of the Talis, and each one gets whatever is Aduk in the Talis. And then we have Shnayim Ochsim B'Talis Yachloku with regard to the Shar. Machvile Rabbi Avo. Machvile usually he waves his hand and he gives him a sign. So Rabbi Avo waves his hand to Rabbi Tachlifa and he points up towards the top. And what does that mean? So the Mefarshim say that God has to somehow get involved in this dispute as well. Now, how do we invoke the existence of God in this dispute? Ubishvua. There's got to be a shvua. Shvua means to obviously take the name of God. And there cannot be yachloku bishvua. That's what Rabbi Avo wants to point out, that the Braisa is missing, has omitted one important piece of the puzzle, and that is Ashar, that with regard to the Shar, you don't just simply say Yachloku, but rather Yachloku B'Shvua. Now, I have a note here that I wanted to share with you, which is based to some extent on Tosus Dibra Maskel Machvile, and he says the following. Nishba, he says he takes a Shvua not only on the Shar, but afilu al kol ma shenotel Dahainu afilu al mashiv toch yado. Even on the toch yado, which he's adukim bo, he needs to take a shvua. And that lechora is a pella. What would be the logical reason? I mean, he's totally muchsuk on that part of the talis. So he answers the following: Kevon shetiknu es hashvua. Once they establish the shvua, and if you recall, Rabbi Yochanan at the beginning of the Masechta says, "Kedei shlo ye kol echad holech v'toke v'taliso shel chavero." Is therefore, if we're afraid that somebody grabbed onto his friend's talis, shaykh l'taken kev af, we require shvua af al mashe b'toch yada. Now it's interesting, because although in a certain sense the shvua is inapplicable to that part that he has a full-fledged chazaka on, he's adik on, but nevertheless we go back to the original reason for the enactment of the shvua. In other words, in general there's no need for a shvua. Shnayim ochsa v'talis, everyone has a chazaka, everyone gets what's muchsak. And there's no need for a shvua here. But the answer is, we had a reason for a shvua, despite the fact that there is no reason for the shvua, if you follow what I mean. It's on a deraisa level, for sure, kol masha tachas yodam shalom, and we don't need a shvua. But once we institute a shvua, because of the sociological deterioration of people who are now beginning to become so willing to grab on to other people's mamon, then that measurement of a shmur, framework or definition of the shmur now should apply to any muhzakus, even if he's aluk in part of the talis, because maybe he just grabbed on to his friend's talis. Oh. But then he says the following: the afshe nishba, even though he's taking a shvua, adayin yesh lo chiyach, we could still establish that masha biyodo keilu hu chatuch me'ashar. What does that mean? You might be saying the following. Let's think out loud. He's taking a shvua. Let's say he's aduk in, we'll call it 60% of the talis, right? Mm-hmm. The other fellow is aduk in 25% of the talis. So you have 60 plus 25. There's still 15% of the talis that's between the two of them. Mm-hmm. Now, let's go back to the one who's aduk in 60% of the talis. He's now going to take a shvua, not just on 60%, but on 60% plus 50% of the shah, correct? Of that extra 15%. So now in one shvua, he's claiming ownership on everything. What do I mean by everything? Everything that he's getting. He's going to walk home with not just 60%, but we'll call it 70%. I'm just using a number. So the 70% is one entity. No. He's saying the following: Adayin Masha Biyodo is Chatuch Me'ashar. We still see that which is in his hands, the 60%, is cut off from the rest of the talis. Shivlokate, if you don't agree with me, but if you see rather that he's getting 70% of the talis as one entity, is then lo hayad notel Yosef Imechza. He would not have rights to pick up more than 50% of the talis. Why are we giving him 70% of the talis? The fact that we're awarding him 77% of the talis, well, I understand 10% because that's under the yachlok or the shah, but as far as the 60% is concerned, why should he get more than half? He should only get 50%, maximum, total. The answer is because we view that part of the talis that he was aduk in as if it was separated from the rest of the talis. So there's a very sensitive paradox here, because we're saying Dover Vipucha, we're saying A and not A at the same time. On the one hand, we're telling you to take a shvua on 70% of the talis, which defines that 70% as one entity. One shvua. It's not like there are two dinei Torah here. There's one din Torah on the part that he's aduk, where you called it 60%, and another din Torah on the other half of what he's not aduk in, we called it another 10%. No. It's one din Torah, and I'll prove it to you. He takes one shvua that swallows up the entire sum. However, don't mistakenly conclude that the two parts of his shvua are really one and the same. And they uniformly integrate to form one indivisible whole. That's not true. Because if that were true, then we would have to apply the principle of Yachloku. And in Yachloku, nobody gets more than 50% of the talis. Why is he getting 60% of the talis? The answer must be that percentage, we call it 60%, is a separate entity. And what does it mean it's a separate entity? It's as if it's cut off from the rest of the talis. It's because on that he has a complete tfisa. And his buddy doesn't have a tfisa on that 60%. So that 60% is no longer viewed as part of the entirety of the talis, because if it was part of the entirety of the talis, then we would split the talis 50-50.
As opposed to the Mishnah, where we're talking about the ta'anot that they're making, here we have no discussion of any ta'anot whatsoever.
Right. And the whole thrust of Rabbi Avoh when he heard this brisa was shvua, shvua, shvua. He's yelling about shvua. And the reason he's yelling about shvua is because if you and I intuitively would have said that the part of the talis that are other gone, each one respectively, is completely cut off for the rest of the talis, then let's talk about a shvua in the framework of Yachloku, within the restricted area of the Yachloku, which is called the Shar.
Yeah.
But there shouldn't be any shvua on the part that he's aduk on, because that's a separate entity, and that we grant him up front. It's not under contention anymore. So why does he have to take a shvua? Again, if you're asking why he has to take the shvua, I can answer you because of the shelo yeyeh kol echad holech v'tokev v'taliso shel chaveru. But in terms of the mechanics of why he should take the shvua, we have a problem here. Because if he's taking a shvua on the part that he's aduk on, then he should only be awarded 50% of the talis, because the shvua of our Mishnah requires yachloku. But the answer is, though, on the part that he's getting, he's awarded because he's aduk, he's exclusively aduk, to the exclusion of the other valdin, that part is not included on the yachloku, and therefore we can award him 60% of the talis, more than 50%. Well, then you're involved in a contradiction, because if you're saying that 60% that he's odukin is not part of the yachloku, then why does the din of shvua, which applies to yachloku, extend to include even the 60%? Why is he taking a shvua? That's 60%. That's ke'ilu chatuch me'ashar. If it's chatuch me'ashar, it's a separate din Torah. And on that, there's no debate. You know, there's no tzad shekinegen who's claiming against him. There's no reason for him to take a shvua. The answer is that you take your shvua even on the 60% that he's aduk on, because it's all one entity of a talis, and therefore there's one shvua on everything. If that be the case, then how do you violate the principle of yachloku? How do you grant him more than 50% of the talis? So this was the issue that really Rabbi Avoh was addressing, the paradoxical nature of requiring a shvua even on the part that he's aduk on, even on the percentage that we're going to grant him up front, he still has to take a shvua on that. We're not going to apply the logic of ke'ilu chatuch me'ashar, but rather we'll integrate it into one entity together with the rest of the contested area of the part of the talis. And that integration will express itself in one single shvua on the entire percentage. We call it 70% of the talis. But paradoxically, we will say keman de chatuch tavi with regard to the halacha of granting it more than yachloku, more than half of the talis. Now the Gemara asks the following question. If you're telling me that in this brisa we have shnayim adukim b'shtar, and therefore we're not going to apply the principle of yachloku, so then when does the Mishnah apply the principle of yachloku? It's got to be a case which is not adukim. Elamas nisa the ketonim de palgi ba'adadi, the Mishnah insists on applying the rule of what? Yachloku. The lo ketoni, it doesn't say zenotel, this one gets maybe more than half, this one gets less than half, etc., etc. And she, you know, I'd welcome she other magas. So what's the question? What's the case? What's the scenario in which we apply the principle of yachloku? So you and I could have said they each are holding on to half the talis. You know, it's like in the international date one, and you're standing on this side of the international date line, I'm on the other side of the international date. We're shaking hands, you know, but we're both standing on that line. So there's a line that makes 50% of the talis. You're holding on up until that 50%, and I am the other 50%. Well, the Gemara doesn't want to go down that road. He pronounces it karkishasa. I mean, I was brought up karkashta. Okay, fine. Karkishasa. It'll probably take me a million years to relearn it, because once you're used to calling it one name. So these are the chutim ayotzim mitzidei hatalis. Right? These are the fringes of the talis. The enom ochazin, the two people, Reuven and Shimon, are not holding on ba bi'atz, or the gufa shel talis. Because if they were, it would be adukim, we would give each one according to the measure of the talis that he has under his hand. Mm-hmm. And therefore, cholkim makula, we're going to say yachloko on the entire thing. Now, the Gemara is not reducing or diminishing the significance of ochazin, right? We've built castles in the sky on the fact that the Mishnah says shnayim ochazin betalis, and each one has a din of a tafus on that part of the talis. But the Gemara is now being mechadish that you don't have to hold on to the gufo shel talis in order to give yourself a status of ochazin on half the talis. You become an ochez and a tofes on half the talis simply because you're holding on to the karkishasa. And this is a big chiddush, because I would say, you know, okay, each one's holding on to karkashasa, let's cut off these little fringes, and each one gets the fringes. But the Mishnah says each one gets half the talis. So it seems like being tofes b'karkashasa gives you a din of achiza on the entire talis. So you have two people who are both ochazin on the entire talis. What do you do in such a case? So you split the talis, and you recognize the achiz of Reuven on half the talis and Shimon on the other half. Amarav Bisharshia, Shmamina. Now, here we get into the laws of Kinyan Sudar, and which section of Tanakh is dedicated to Kinyan Sudar, the source for Kinyan Sudar, Megillas Rus. Root.
Right.
Okay. I have to say it the way you say root. How do you spell that? R-O-O-T? It's like the roots?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. So what happens to Megillus root? Mm-hmm. What happens is that Boaz wants to knock off the Ploni Almodi from marrying Ruth. So he needs what? He needs a Kinyan Sudar. And basically the Machna, who is that Ploni Almodi, he's going to give a sudar to the Kodeh. Okay, that's one way of understanding Kinyan sudar, and that means that the sudar belongs to the Ploni Almoni, and he's giving it now over to Boaz. Oh, now the question is, what about part of the sudar that he's still holding on to? So let's say we have a sudar which is being given to the machne. Okay, this is a little bit complicated because in the case of Boaz and the Ploni Almoni, the Almoni is going to be the machne. Now we're giving him a sudar. So it means that Boaz is giving a sudar to the Ploni Almoni, who's now being machne to Boaz, the rights that he has in Rut. But the problem is that this Ploni Almoni is still holding on to the sudar. How much of the sudar, right? The sudar is let's imagine the size of this page, right? Mm-hmm. So how much of the sudar does the Ploni Almoni have to transfer over to the hand of Boaz?
Controlling interest.
Right. So what's the controlling interest? So that's where Rav Misharshia wants to analyze. So Rav Bosai, there's such a thing called a machne and a kone. In the case of Boaz and the Ploni Almoni, I would say that the Ploni Almoni is the machne and Boaz is the kone. Now, in order to effectuate a kinyan sudar, then the kone has to give a sudar to the machne. Well, so that would mean that Boaz, who's the kone, would have to give the sudar to Ploni Almoni, who is the machne. Says Rav Misharshia, came in the toughest bay sholosh al sholosh etzbos. I'm adding the word etzbos. Is karinin bay? It's already considered a fulfillment of anasan l're'eu, as if he had given the sudar over to the Ploni Almoni, the machne. The kone gave to the machne the sudar. How much of the sudar does the machne hold on to? Sholosh etzbos al sholosh etzbos. And that is borrowed from the laws of Tuma Vitara.
It's a beged.
And that has a shame beged, correct. Less than gimel al gimel doesn't have a shame beged. Now the Torah says in root, it says shalaf ish na'alo. The word na'alo, which literally means a sandal or a shoe, but here it should be translated figuratively or conceptually as a kli. Every kinyan sudar has to be effectuated by a kli, whether it's a sudar, sometimes today we use a pen, or any other utensil, but it has to have a shape kli. Now, at what point did the kone give to the machne a kli when he gave him the sudar? And the answer is, as long as he gave him sholosh al sholosh etzbosav. So in other words, the Ploni Almoni, who's the machne, grabs on to sholosh al sholosh etzbosav. If he grabs on to less, then it's not called the kinyan sudar. Why? Because you have to give over to the machne a kli. And a kli is only 3x3. What makes it a kli at 3x3? It's called a beged. Beged means like a cloth of significance. You could use it to sponge your floor or clean some surface, right? So it's got 3 etzbos on 3 etzbos. It's basically a very small kli. And he writes the following, that the Shach writes in Choshe Mishpat Simon Lamed Kuf Lamed Ches, She'im hu tofes biyodo pochos bishir zeh, if the machne holds on to less than the shir of gimel al gimel etzbos, ein bezdim is dakikim la seislo zos kodim chaluko. In other words, now we have to wait for actually cutting up the sudar. So even as the Shach claims that even if he gets into his hand less than gimel al gimel, he still has a right to claim that small section and cut out that part of the sudar. even though it's less than Gimel al Gimel. I'm not sure I understand why the Shach says so, because Lechora, if the Kinyan itself in Nasan, what does it say, Vishalaf Ishnalo, is not fulfilled, then I'm not giving you the Suder as a gift. You know, this is not a separate gift. So therefore he quotes the Prisha and the Levush, Shevipachos Mishol Shetzbosos Eino Noto Klal. He doesn't have rights to anything. And I would say the reason he doesn't have rights is because since it was not Sholaf Ishnalo Me'olov, the Kenyan has not been clinched, so there's no point to claiming ownership over the part of the Suda that's less than Sholosh Al Sholosh. Now, let me ask you the following question. When Boaz gives the Sudar to the Machne, to the Ploni Almoni, does he get it back? It says, Sholaf Ish Nalo, V'nasal Re'eu. He gives it over to his friend. His friend is, in this case, the Machne.
Once he's given it to him, it affects the Kenyan.
Correct. Can he get back his Sudar?
Sure. He wants to give it back.
Correct. That's called Almanas Lahachzir.
Yeah.
That the derech of Kinyan Chlipin is that what you give is only for the purpose of clinching the Kinyan.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. And the Gemara says, Kiman de Posik Dabi the psik dummy, the cunning. It's as if to say that the Machna, once he received Gimel al Gimel of the Sudar, it's as if that part is cut off for the rest of the Talis. I'm sorry, for the rest of the Sudar in this case. And he makes a Kinyan on that part. And basically, when he makes a Kinyan, he's Machna whatever was agreed to be the subject of the transaction. So again, it's the Gevaldige Chiddush here that Rav Masharshi derives from Abraisa, that just like in the case of Adukim, even though it's not going to be Achloku Shavah B'Shavah, there's no Chalukah down the middle, that's because I view the part of the Talis that we call the 60% of the Talis that he's grabbing onto as if it was cut off from the rest of the Talis. And that's going to allow me, in the case of Sudar, to say that once the Machna received a Kli's worth of this Sudar, we can view it as if he grabbed on to that Gimel al Gimel and Kiposik Dummy. It's as if we can cut it off from the rest of the Sudar. And therefore he makes a Kinyan on those Gimel al Gimel et Bos. So it means that what Rav Masharshi is hinting at is that if not for this Braisa, I would say that a person can't be Zocha when he's grabbing on to part of a Chafetz. Because what does it mean that you're grabbing on to part of the Chafetz? Is it V'nasan B'yodo? Did he actually put it V'nasan B'l'Re'eu? He only has part of the Suda. So where's the V'nasan B'l'Re'eu? How do you effectuate and validate a Kinyan Sudar when the Torah says, the Tanakh says, V'nasa L'Re'eu? What's V'nasa L'Re'eu? He didn't get the Sudar. He got a very small section of the Sudar, which he grabbed onto. The answer is, if that section of the Sudar has a Shem Beged to it, it's Gimel al Gimel et Bos, we see it Kiman D'Pasik Dami as a separate entity. We separate it from the rest of the Sudar, and he has a complete Kinyan on that Shem Beged, which means that Gimel al Gimel of the Sudar. And all this is implicit in our Mishnah, I'm sorry, our Raisa, of Zenotel Achiyonu Magas V'Zenotel Achiyonu Magas, that we have to cut it off from the Talis in order to suspend the principle of Yachlok.
And when we spoke about Gimel al Gimel, that's irrespective of the size of the entire.
Right, because it already has a function once it's Gimel al Gimel et Bos. You can already,
even though it may not be a sufficient amount in order to
to function in the same capacity.
In the same capacity, right, as taking possession of that object.
You're right.
and it could be, relatively speaking, karkashta.
So the answer is that we have to apply the principle of kimanda pasuk dami, and what the kona is giving to the makna is that part that's kimanda pasuk dami. All I'm giving to you is that gimel al gimel et spos that you're grabbing onto, which has a separate function. It has a shape begin. It can be used to wipe the counter space, and view that as a separate entity, kimanda pasuk dami. All right. So the Gemara asks the following question. Maishna be the Rav Chisda, be Hod Rav Chisda. What's Rav Chisda? Now this is a sugya in Perek HaZorek in Gittim, which is called Get Biyodo Meshicha Biyodo. So there's a string that's attached. There's always something attached, right, to the get.
Strings attached.
And he gives the get over to our hand. The entirety of the get is in our hand. And the Torah says, Venasa Biyado, so we think, wonderful, the get is Chal. But, Meshicha Biyado, he's holding on to the string. And the string is tied down to the get. You know, you drill a hole in the top of the get, and you put the string in, and you tie a knot. And basically, the issue is, can he pull the get back in by using this the strings, like the strings of a puppet?
Yeah.
So Rav Chisda says it all depends. Im yochel natko ulavio etzlo. If he has enough of a strength on the get, based on the chut, you know, the meshicha. Meshicha is the chut that's connected to the get. Is then eino megureshes. That's not called v'nasan biyada. Be in lav megureshes. If he has no ability to pull back the get, despite the fact that he's holding on to the meshicha, then the get is valid. So what's the cash over here? Rav Chisda makes a lot of sense. What did we see that becomes antithetical to Rav Chisda? So he gives a summary here of Tosis Divya Maschel Im, and he says the following. Muchach, what do we learn from Rav Chisda? She'ein zu nesina im aget nosin biyada bi'ofen she'efshel akachto heimena. So imagine in the case of the Machna and the Kona, where the Kona gives a Sudar to the Machna, all the Machna is holding on to is Gimel al Gimel. And yet, the Kona is holding on to the balance of the Sudar. Certainly, he has enough of the Sudar in his hands that he can schlep, he can pull the Sudar out of the hands of the Machna. He says, V'kosha, Shemuchach, from Rav Chisda, she'ein zu nesina maget nasun biyada, despite the fact that she's holding on to the get, be ofen, but it's a situation in which she'efshal lekachto heimena, that she can, I'm sorry, that he can pull the get back to his hands. Now, that's against our Gemara, our thesis here about Vidasan Lareyu in the case of a Sudar. Because in the case of the Sudar, we said that the Gimel HaGimel is considered Kechatuch Me'ashar. It's a separate entity. So why not consider the Get Kechatuch Me'ha Meshicha? And basically what the Gemara is asking here is that if let's say Boaz gives a sudar to the Ploni Almoni, and Boaz remains in physical possession, you know, holding on to almost the entire sudar, all he's given over to the Ploni Almoni is Gimel al Gimel,
right,
then certainly Boaz is able to pull it back with him. That's even more profound than Meshicha Biyodo. The answer has to be is Kimanda Pasuk Dami, that we view the Gimel al Gimel in the hands of the Ploni Almoni, meaning of the Machne, as Kimanda Pasuk Dami, as if it was a separate entity. Why don't we do that in the case of Meshicha Biyodo? Why don't we separate the get from the Meshicha? So Gemara says, "Hasam krisus beinin v'leka, hacha nesina beinin v'ika." Whenever you see the Gemara differentiating by quoting a pasuk, what do you have to use? What tool? Yeah, I call it a brisket tool. Do you have to use?
The context of that pasuk.
This is called a din misuyam. Din misuyam means in Yiddish we call it a bezuder halacha, bezuder din. It's a special halacha. How do I establish a special halacha, which is not the rule but the exception to the rule? By quoting a pasuk. If the pasuk sets up a new standard and a new requirement in a particular context, it means that that context should be commanded pasuk, though. Meaning it should be seen as a separate entity. In the case of get, the Torah just didn't say put the get in our hands. Had the Torah said give her the get, like the Torah says by Nal in root of what does it say? The shalaf ish nalo v'nosel reyehu. So it just says take off your shoe and give it over to you. It doesn't add anything or any embellish anything that would add a condition. In the case of again, it doesn't just say v'nosel v'yada, but it adds sefer krisus. Now sefer krisus tells you something about not the physical object of the get, but its purpose. What we call halos. And the halos of the get is called krisus. And krisus means you are a free agent. You're no longer connected to me in any shape or form. Now she needs the get. That get will serve as a proof to establish that she was divorced from her husband. But the problem is he can pull the get any second because he's got the mashiach of miyada. So that's not really a krisus. But in general, the Torah doesn't add that extra word, so there's no requirement of krisus in the case of, for example, kinyan sudar. And therefore, we could say that even though it's mashiach miyado, it's kemad pasuk dami. And the gimel al gimel etzvos is enough to achieve enesina miyado. Omar Rava, im hoisa talis musheves cholkim. What happens if there are lines or strips of gold in a talis?
In the area that they're not holding on to.
And they, right. Right. So the Gemara says that in the name of Rava that we split the talis, you get 50 and I get 50. And you'll get 50% of the gold, and I'll get 50% of the gold. Pshita, lo tzricha dekoy dehava bein mitzi. In other words, the zahav is closer to one of them. It's in the middle of the talus in such a way. Oh, okay. No, I skipped one step. I'm sorry. I'm ahead of myself. Right. So koy bein mitzi means that the strip of gold is sewn into the middle of the talus. So hanali pshita. So what did you gain? Lo tzricha de mekarvei legabichat. That one of the two is holding part of the talus that's closer to the gold. Mal detem, I would have argued, and this seems like a very compelling argument. Di omer le, he has a right to say to his friend plog hachi. Right now, let's divide it in a way that which is closer to me is in my half, and that which is further away from you is in my half.
Yeah.
And now we're up to the Kamashlon. Now, we have to take a deep breath, because at this point, it seems to me, Lafayette, that the Mao Detem is a very compelling argument. That we're going to look and see where the Zav is. Correct? So let me give an example. Let's see if I can... I'm going to use this as a symbol of the talus. Correct? So let's say that the two of us are holding on from these two ends. And if this is the Zav, then we should split it down the middle here, and it ends up that whoever it is called Reuven will get the Zav part. Why? Because it's vicariolin. The other opportunity would be to split it this way, in such a way that each one gets the Zav. So Rava says in the Habamina that why should we split it down this way? You know, I'm close over here. Why don't I have the right to demand that we split it this way? In which case, the Zav belongs to my section. The Amalei that you the other person has a right to say my chaz is the palgis hachi plug hachi. Now, if you want to, let's say you want to put the split over here to the width, let's call it, right? And if we split it to the width, then you'll get the part that has the zav in it. No, I have a right to say let's split it to the length, not to the rochav, but to the orech. Now, if we split it to the orech, then each one is going to get an equal share in the gold, in the zav. And here we have a chiddush of Rabbi Elchanan. Rabbi Elchanan uses this yesod over and over again throughout Shnayim Mok. So, but he says the following: Muchach mikan, what we see from here, is that kol echad muchzak bekula. In other words, the following. If you would say that each one is muchzak only on half the talis, then let's see where we should do the chalukah. If the chalukah is that you're holding you and I are holding the two sides of the width of the talis, then it makes sense that we should split down the width of the talis. If you and I are holding on the length of the talis, then we should split on the length of the talis. Why does Gemara say it doesn't matter where we're holding? If we're both holding onto the talus, we're going to split it away through the length of the talus that each one gets half the zav. The answer is, says Rabbi Chanan, that kol echad muksak bekula. Each one is considered a muksak on the entire talus. She'imu muksakak bechetzia. Hainu bechetzia sabuch elav. It should be the half of the talus that's close to him, you know, where he's holding on to the talus. Uvadai shalo yikabel es hazav. He won't get the zav. Hanim to bechetzia acher. The answer must be, says Rav Chanan, that each one is considered muchzak on the entire talus. So that's the sugya of shnayim adukim and talus. Now the Gemara has a different sugya called shnayim adukim b'shtar. Right, Toner Rabbanon, Shnayim Adukim B'Shtar. Now, who dropped the shtar? Right, a shtar is given by the lova over to the malva after he gets his money. Why are they both holding on to the shtar? Is malva Omer? Malva claims Shalihu. This shtar is my shtar, and I have rights to use it to collect the loan from the lova. But enough, I'll be many. It fell from me, and we both ran to pick it up. Ubitzasiv and the Lova was able to get there in time to grab onto the shtar. Now, why was the Malva holding onto the shtar in such a way that he dropped it? The answer is because he expects to get his money back. And the moment he gets his money back, he wants to be able to give back the shtar to the Lova. Instead, he dropped it on the ground and he didn't get his money back. So the Lova took advantage of according to the Malva's claim, the Lova took advantage of the situation. He immediately picked up the shtar. The Lova Omer Shalchahu, it is true that you originally owned the shtar, but Parativ Lecha, I've already paid you back. Now, as soon as I paid you back, you returned the shtar to me, and I dropped the shtar. And now you grab the shtar as if I never paid you back. So the Braisa records a machlokas here between Rebbe and Rav Shimon Gamliel. Rebbe says, Yiskai Mashtar Machosma. All we need in order for the Malva to get the shtar back is we need a kiyum on the shtar. We have to authenticate its signatures. And once we do so, then according to Rebbe, that's the first opinion in the Braisa, we can return the shtar to the Malva. Why? Because the shtar makuyum is always assumed to be kosher. And valid, and it testifies, but it can only testify if it's in the hands of the Malva. And Rav Shimon Gamliel says, Yachloku, meaning that the fact that you are Mekayim the Shtar is not meaningful, because you could be Mekayim the Shtar, and then you might have received payment, and therefore you gave the shtar back to the lova, even though it was a shtar makuyam, it's irrelevant. And the lova dropped the shtar. So we don't know who dropped the shtar. Is it the malva or the lova? Therefore we apply the principle of yachloku. Okay, Rabbi, we'll stop here. Now I want to learn